The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Wrapping up our number one, Nourish to Flourish, with Chef Julius Jackson and Holly Goroff. We call her Holly G, Holly Louise. Next month, right, we're going to focus on muscle mass and all that stuff and some of the risks associated with that, you know what I'm saying? So keep that in mind, Holly. I'm sure you've talked with a number of your clients and patients about that as well. And Julius, that's something that you got to look at, right? Because you deal with athletes on a regular basis. So putting on weight and all that stuff. But those are the things that I want us to focus on for April. Okay?
Sounds good, man. Sounds good.
Wonderful.
It's a pleasure.
You got a great conversation this morning. Thanks for joining me early. We'll do a 9 o'clock edition next month. I promise.
All right. Take care.
You got it.
All right. Have a wonderful day.
Okay, you too. So that's Chef Julius Jackson out to the Rock, my brother's workshop, cafe and bakery over there. They're building a nice campus over there. Heading down, when you come down Rapoon Hill, you take a left when you're going up by Duno, the Duno bypass, and that whole area there is a new like development area going on there. So looking forward to seeing that facility, and of course Holly G over there in Raleigh, California. Let me do some programming notes for tonight for Channel 12 before I bring in my esteemed guest, the one and only Jay. You know what I'm saying? The Jay, right? Got the PBS News Hour Thursday, March 21st at 7 p.m. Then you heard earlier the Washington Report. We got Stacey Plaskett, Delegate Stacey Plaskett and Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett and Congresswoman Catherine Clark. Tonight on the Washington Report from 8 to 8:30. Then we got an edition of the Governors from 8:30 to 9:30. Explore the life of the last appointed and first elected governor of the United States Virgin Islands, Melvin H. Evans. That's from 8:30 to 9:30. Then for an hour and a half, 9:30 to 11, Dennis A. Charles, an interrupted conversation. Explore the story of one man's struggle to follow his dream and the obstacles he encounters in his professional as well as his personal life in an important company from 11 to midnight. Okay, so the news hour at 7, Washington Report at 8, the governor's at 8:30, Dennis Charles, an interrupted conversation from 9:30 to 11, and then Amanpour and Company. You know, it's a pleasure to welcome back, you know, as we promised from a conversation we had last month, Miss Jessica Samuel, PhD, right? Originally from St. Croix, but out of St. John now?
Out of St. Croix now, but also from St. John.
Yeah, out of St. Croix now.
Mm-hmm.
Originally from?
Here.
St. Croix. Spend time in St. John.
Correct.
No, you're there, yeah?
Correct.
Okay, good. Okay, good. But you still have Virgin Islands now?
Through and through.
Through and through. That's what we're talking about. And of course, I told you, we get you back on for VI History Month, right?
Yes.
So, Analyze This is a show of its word. Not the man. Not a man of its word. A show of its word.
I see that.
Glad to have you on. How you been?
Thank you for having me again. I've been well.
Yeah, good. How your sister, Miss Guy, right? That's her last name?
Dr. Guy.
Dr. Guy, how's she doing?
She's doing fabulously.
That's good.
Yes.
That's good. So, a couple Mondays back, had a conversation about VI History on the show. And of course, Department of Education, the Board of Education was on yesterday. We've had lawsuits. Want to know why VI History and Caribbean History isn't more prevalent and impactful in our curriculum in the Virgin Islands and all that good stuff. So,
right.
You know, you're the perfect guest. So I'm going to ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
It's a two-part question. What is VI History and how important is VI History
mm-hmm.
from someone who is knowledgeable of our existence and our ancestors and all that good stuff?
Yeah, that's a fabulous question.
You're on a fabulous show.
I know. Thank you.
I'm sorry. You know, my show is flawless.
Like, as you should.
You know, it's always flawless.
Right.
While we there. Yeah.
I'm not mad about it. No. Yeah. Virgin Islands history, I think, is like any other history, mm-hmm. in that it's really the study of a people, their culture, the things that impact their lives and livelihood over the course of time, mm-hmm. right? So it's events plus time. That's truly history. And I think for the Virgin Islands, it's really about the studying of our existence, colonial through and through. I think that we can say safely that we've been under colonial domination for 300 and plus years continuously, mm-hmm. though we may not necessarily consider it to be the case given our territorial status. But in fact, you know, that transfer from ruler to ruler was indeed the continuum of colonization. And I think when we think of Virgin Islands history, it's really about thinking through that timeline, right? Thinking through our existence from beginning to end, and how it continues to evolve.
Now, I'd like to apologize to you. Reintroduce yourself to my audience. For those who may not have heard you,
sure.
The first go around, you are a Virgin Islander through and through, as you said, but there's more to you. Talk about that.
Yes. Well, my name is Dr. Jessica Shamira Samuel. Many people know my middle name, so mm-hmm. I'm throwing it in there this morning. Mm-hmm. To the listening audience, I am an interdisciplinary scholar, an educator, and a community activist. I am also the founder and CEO of Radical Education and Advocacy League, which is an educational organization focused on providing equitable educational outcomes and beyond for historically disenfranchised students.
Real.
Real, yes, and those who serve them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Educated here in the Virgin Islands and on the mainland?
Correct, yeah. Went through public and private schooling mm-hmm. here in the territory on St. Croix as well as St. John. Ended up getting a full ride to Wesleyan University, where I studied African American studies and cultural anthropology, and then was able to get my master in education in secondary English from University of Missouri, St. Louis, where I also taught high school students, 9th, 11th, and 12th.
Gifhill graduate?
Gifhill graduate.
What I'm talking about. No, the main campus of the University of Missouri in Columbia, Columbia.
Columbia, yes.
Right.
Columbia,
and the Show Me State, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm a geography buff, so don't hold it against me. I love all the nicknames for all the states. For those I can remember, you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
But Missouri is a big state as it relates to history. We've had a lot of things happen in those Midwestern states. On a number of different fronts. One name that comes to mind for me is Dred Scott. I don't know. I'm sure you've heard of Dred Scott, the Kansas-Nebraska Act and all that stuff out there. Well, of course, Dred Scott resonates because Natty Dred, this part of it, you know. So what I learned about Dred Scott, they were like, wow, Dred been alive from the language, you know what I'm saying? And I'm also a name thing, you know. That's my thing, right?
Yeah.
But history is so important. So you spoke of I'm sure I pronounced this correctly, colonization,
mm-hmm.
right, of the Virgin Islands, mm-hmm. right? But before we get to that, why isn't there more of an emphasis on what took place before the colonization?
Mm.
The Arawaks, the Caribs, the Tainos, and the richness of their culture before, you know, they were besieged and under siege when you know, part of them come from Europe,
yeah,
claiming they're going east when they went west,
right,
and all that stuff. So everything is about the seven flags, but that mm-hmm. that pre-seven flag, the most important of the eight flags, tends to be pushed aside. Why is that, and why are we allowing it?
Yeah, I think the primary reason is erasure, right? Part of the colonial project is literally erasing history, indigenous history and existence. And because of how colonization took place within the Caribbean, and specifically here among our islands, we know that there was essentially an extermination of our indigenous populations, right? To a great extent.
Mm-hmm.
And with
that's a painful word to process, because when we think exterminate, we think in bugs. And that's how they treated our ancestors.
Yeah, right? Yeah. They literally died from diseases and warfare and a host of other things and ailments. And so when you have a population that's basically snuffed out so rapidly, it's really difficult to really keep them in our consciousness, especially within contemporary society.
Mm-hmm. Now, last week I had Malik Siku. We had a great conversation. That was his second go around. He's coming back again on Tuesday. Because, you know, folks like yourself and Malik, when I command my phone, I just started to act up. That people like the idea that there's a medium that could stimulate thought, process things that they don't normally hear on the radio. So I want to thank you and the Maliks of the world for doing that. And we were talking about the Danish window in particular. Right, annexation beginning in St. Thomas 1672, St. John 1718, and then, of course, arguably the most important year historically in our existence, 1733, for multiple reasons, right? Mm-hmm. The rebellion in St. John, right, and the purchasing of. And I don't like using that term, and he said that as well, right? So I gonna back off of that term, right? Not the purchasing, the bringing into the fold St. Croix, okay. 1733, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Where the Danes brought us into the fold, the acquisition, whatever the term, right? Transfer, that's the term, that's the word that he liked, right?
Okay.
In 1733, right? So it happened the same year, rebellion, St. Croix. And then I was teasing him because... he admitted a fact, which was St. Croix had value, right? Because of, you know, our soil, mm-hmm. right? And the fact that you could grow thing here. And so it was an economic move to allow for the entire Virgin Islands. So I was teasing him because I don't normally listen to my show, the podcast, but I listened to that day because I was having some fun with him. I said, again... St. Croix to the rescue. So I was teasing him. Mm. I like to tease with St. Thomas, Comte, what I mean. Because they like to say, we call him from St. Thomas the capital. I say, yeah, man, you got a capital, right? But the collateral has always existed on the Big Island. You know what I'm saying? So I just like to have fun with that, right? That part of it, and here we are almost 300 years removed from 1733. And we still don't seem to understand how valuable we are individually, collectively, naturally, as it relates to our environment,
right.
And geographically, which is even probably more important, you know, because we provide so many outlets, you know, so many forms of relief for everybody. You know, why is it we don't sell our value more and promote our value more than we do? What is it about? Well, you know what? We're just going along to get along. And you know, once I get my check and nobody don't bother me and I could do what I want, then everything's safe. When in fact, that's not enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in order to sell your value, you have to first know your value.
Ooh, taking shots, babe.
I'm just trying to speak truth.
Taking shots, Doc. I like it.
I think it's true, though. I think that you can only sell what you know you have and if you truly understand what it is.
So that knowledge thing you're talking about?
It. Absolutely. I think it goes back to an awareness and recognition of who we are as a people, our history and our culture, which ties very directly into all of the struggle and work around getting VI history deeply embedded into our local curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and it's not even just about like the schools, absolutely we want our schools to be a reflection of what we know to be true in terms of our heritage, our history, and our culture. But it's also, I think, a matter of informing and raising the consciousness of our wider community.
Mm-hmm.
So if a people aren't familiar, if they have not been exposed to the details of their history, if we're not constantly talking about the 1733 uprising, rebellion, revolution, however you want to categorize that, if we're not talking about the import of contract day, if we're not talking about emancipation, if we're not even interrogating transfer day and having these very open and very audacious and transparent conversations, then it's not going to really seep into our consciousness how powerful and valuable we are as a people. And it's only then that we can actually start saying, oh, we are worth much more than people want to sell us for.
So knowledge is king, queen, prince, ruler, princess, right? Run everything. So that's where it starts.
Yes.
Right? So I'm going to read one of my listeners. I'm going to be having this discussion on Monday, March 11th. It was the last week. Ms. Molina, Gwen Marie Molina, she said, what's missing is a curriculum. Lots of books on VI history, but no curriculum. Mm. Supposedly being written, but not yet seen. Not sure why the delay. Curriculum is absolutely critical. That's what the Board of Education was here yesterday. We talked about this. Anybody could say, I'm going to write that book. But how you get it to the masses at the appropriate time, you know, so that they ain't picking it up 15 and 20 years after when they could have had access to it. And Roger Hill, I keep mentioning his name, he had a book named Clear the Road. Mm-hmm. And that was for fourth graders. And he had illustrations and all that stuff. One thing I like, for those of you who don't know, Dr. Samuel, she's really a doctor for sure because she's there taking notes. when the show done, she gonna be doing her research and all that good stuff. And I like that. We got so much, not just history, but rich history, yes, that a lot of us don't know about. Mm. And a curriculum at the school level, and also something at the library level for adults, right? We shouldn't just think of curriculum for school. We need to think of yesterday we had a ribbon cutting for the Florence Williams Library, so that's a good step in the right direction. But we need, for when folks walk in and say, well, I'm here in a library, but I'm here in a Virgin Islands library, and there's history about the Virgin Islands that I want to access. Talk about that value. Curriculum in schools and also post school curriculum and access for information.
Yeah. It's really disheartening that, you know, our libraries and archives have essentially been in disarray since 2017. Mm-hmm. And even some might argue prior to that. I remember when I was on St. John attempting to complete my dissertation fieldwork, it was such a struggle, right? Because the library over there was not open, and materials and very like sensitive and valuable documents and archival sources just weren't being tended to or well kept. And I think a lot of it is sort of symbolic of how we collectively think about and value history at this current state. I think on an administrative level, when we think about like government, and individual people who are responsible for governing and ensuring that our natural resources are protected, we have to really value our libraries as a source of information and consciousness raising.
Take a break on that note. We got Dr. Jessica Samuel joining us. We're talking VI History here in VI History Month. Here, Analyze This. We'll take a break and be back right after this.
St. Croix has something for everyone. With two locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
Weekday mornings are a juggle, sometimes even a struggle. Morning Edition from NPR News eases you into your day and keeps you company through the chaos of a busy morning. Hear interviews that give you context on the day's biggest stories, along with reporting and updates on the latest breaking news. Stay on top of the world with Morning Edition every weekday.
Morning Edition, weekdays at 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
Race is complicated. On Code Switch, we don't dumb it down for you.
And on Life Kit, we have advice on everything from money to mental health.
It's Code Switch and Life Kit from NPR.
Saturdays at 2 p.m. on WTJX FM.
Human beings have been making music for tens of thousands of years. It brings us together. It has the power to communicate emotions and ideas. It's a profound part of the human experience. Hear the stories behind the music you love and new music you might fall in love with. I'm Raina Duras. Join me for in-depth interviews with artists who are continuing that musical history on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
Stay updated with news, alerts, and other valuable information with WTJX Newsfeed. Listen to the latest news stories that matter with Marcelina Ventura Douglas. Weekdays at 5 p.m. on WTJX 93.1, WTJX Newsfeed, your source for stories that matter.
Back here, analysis. The good doctor is making a house call, educational house call, a VI history house call. Dr. Jessica Sambo, thank you very much for joining us once again. Originally from Lorraine Village, is that?
I never said out. I am originally from John F. Kennedy. I grew up in Kennedy.
Yeah. Kennedy. Okay, I mixed it up.
Yeah. I lived in Lorraine for a bit, but really from Kennedy.
Oh, you live in Lorraine. Okay, that's what it was. I apologize. Okay. So you're from Christian instead. I cool
yes.
with that. And then
yes.
went over to St. John and Mommy wanted the best for her baby, and the rest is history, good history, and this is VI History Month. You mentioned 2017, a couple of things I want to talk to you about. I want to be very candid about it. Was 2017 a necessary setback that exposed us for what we are and what we're not?
Mm.
Looking back at it, we got 6.5 years of hindsight.
That's a very loaded question.
Very what?
Loaded.
That's what you're about. Because you know what I mean? When you were looking to do your thesis and the dissertation, whatever, and, you know, it was so bad.
It was a struggle.
You know what I mean? So sometimes you need to go back to the term is ground zero.
Yeah.
And maybe 2017 was a ground zero type experience for us, a double whammy within a space of 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know?
So there are a few critical disaster study scholars and environmental historians who talk about disasters.
Mm-hmm. Get closer to the mic so the public will.
Yeah.
There you go.
So folks like Yarimar Bonilla, she's out of Puerto Rico actually, a phenomenal scholar, writes a lot about Puerto Rico and about our status as American territories and how our territoriality informs so much of our lived experience and how we are able to mitigate certain situations and specifically natural disasters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that these scholars posit and I speak to in my work even is that disasters are not singular events, right? They are informed by a host of preceding events, and they themselves ricochet into several others. And so I say that because I think anytime there is a natural disaster, anytime there is an environmental crisis, what we tend to see is the ways in which structural inequalities and problems actually get exposed through the cracks. We start to see how systems that should be working well actually they fail and they crumble under pressure, or we start to see how our very political structure isn't necessarily positioned to support us in times of dire need.
Mm-hmm.
Or we begin to see that the resources we think that we are doing so well in providing to our people, in fact, have not been substantial. There are a host of things that we begin to notice and recognize when there's a natural disaster. And I think that that is really powerful, because disasters are an opening for us to really reckon with some of our most long-standing issues. And I do believe that that's what happened for us here in the Virgin Islands.
Oh, I want to repeat that again so the public will hear it. Disasters are
opportunities for us to reckon with some of our most long-standing issues.
So, it's a yes or no question, no? Was the emperor, was the Virgin Islands naked as a result of the storms?
Yes, absolutely. I think two things come to mind. There's a host of things that we can talk about in terms of what the disasters did or what they exposed. But one of the things I remember experiencing so viscerally because I was away in school during this, I was literally in my second year at Boston University getting the PhD, and all of this was happening in real time. And I remember feeling so helpless and as though what can I do to help my people? And what does all of this mean? And I also remember the ways in which so many people where I was, like in my local Boston context, they were talking about Puerto Rico over and over again, you know? And it was like, Puerto Rico needs us. And Trump went to Puerto Rico and, you know, they're going through it. And I'm not meaning in any way to dismiss the gravity of what took place in the aftermath of Irma and Maria specifically for the island. But it was such a fascinating experience to see the ways in which there was all of this attention drawn to that island, right? And very little drawn to us. And I would like to say that that is for a number of reasons. One is that the diaspora, the Puerto Rican diaspora, is definitely much larger. And so there's greater representation on the mainland. And so therefore there are greater voices to sort of rally behind and support and advocate for things that happen on that island. But I also like to think that there's an element of racial politics, right, that's involved there. We are the only African, primarily African descendant, black colony or territory of the United States. All of the others are either Asian, Pacific Islander, and or Latino. And that's not to say that they're not black Latinos or Afro-Latinos in Puerto Rico.
Because there are.
Yeah. We know that to be true. But the ways in which we actually conceptualize of Puerto Rico as a space versus how we conceptualize the Virgin Islands, they're very distinctly different, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I like to say that our size, as well as the fact that we're predominantly black people, really had us at the outskirts and margins when it came to the disaster and the way that people were really considering the types of relief that we might have needed in that moment.
Well, you left out something. The Puerto Rican population has political and economic influence and impact on the mainland that we don't have.
Yes.
That's where volume comes into play, right? I mentioned this on a regular basis, and I learned 2006. There are as many Puerto Ricans living on the mainland between Boston and D.C. as they were living on the island of Puerto Rico.
Yes.
Right? So that means that they have political clout. So the politics is something that you can't ignore.
No, right? Not at all.
And they could, and with the tiny margins that we're looking at now in Congress, a victory here, a loss here, the next thing you know, leadership flip overnight. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Fickle.
Yeah. We don't have that kind of impact. And that's a volume thing. It's not a knock on us as a people. You know, we just don't have it like that. So that's the reason. That's one of the reasons why I believe that what you're talking about and very accurately articulating is something that we got to deal with.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So in looking at that, isn't that the impetus for us to realize, look, man, we got to get a better bang for our buck. We got to fix that internally.
Mm-hmm.
We can't wait for people from outside to tell us, you know, what we need to do. Mm-hmm. You know, we should already be motivated to do that on our own.
Yeah,
because we're detached. Mm-hmm. You ain't got no energy grid like it got, like when you live, like when it had the power outage in 2003, mm-hmm. when you were still a baby, mm-hmm. right? Had a big power outage in New York City. Why? Something went bad in Ohio.
Right.
That's the grid. Ain't got no grid here. We got to develop our own as related. So that alone should be impetus for us to settle them up. We got to be a little bit more, a lot more efficient.
Yeah.
And focus on deliverables, you know, so that, you know, and it's a kind of condescending mentality. Mm. But we need people to know, don't believe that when you come here and vacation for 10 days and you spend that money, that when you leave, we're going to be hurting. I'm serious. We need to take on this mentality. We gonna be all right, you know. And we live it. We gonna live good, righteous. Mm-hmm. And I believe that type of mentality is lacking here in the Virgin Islands. This notion that we got to always, you know, be concerned about how people outside looking at us. You know, how about us looking at us?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this sounds like a critique of tourism.
No. Tourism is tourism. People gonna want to get away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all I'm saying is,
well, as an industry,
there's there's a nationalism that is lacking, mm. right? You don't have to be radical to be a nationalist.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You can love yourself, mm-hmm. and I don't think there's enough loving of ourselves here in the Virgin Islands, given how rich our history is and the contributions. And that's one thing Malik Siko and I spoke about, and we speak about this on a regular basis. So many educated Virgin Islanders have left here and made their mark around the world.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that. There's value here. Why aren't we promoting that value?
And celebrating it.
That's right. You know what I'm saying? So, and as an educator, and I want to talk about a conversation that I had at some point, a little bit down the road, because you mentioned Yarmir Bonija. Right, and I can research her, but I had a conversation with Clement White, so I wanted to mention some names that he told me about. And if you haven't heard them, I'm sure you'll enjoy reading about them. But what about that? A self-awareness, a confidence to let people know when you come here, you're going to feel sorry for us, just 15, because we are right.
Yeah, I think that a lot of this in my mind, when I think about our status and our condition as a people, I think in historical terms, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sociocultural terms. But to me, 1917 is really a pivotal moment in terms of how we developed
mm-hmm.
and continue to develop our consciousness as a people. When the United States took us under, acquired us, bought us, which is a whole thing that's worthy of its own discussion, we were called an effective poorhouse. Right. And I think that that's really fascinating because it really speaks to the conditions of things at the time, not mm-hmm. just economically,
mm-hmm.
but I also believe
that was 14 years later, you know, that was 14 years after. I was 31 when Hoover came here.
Right.
Yeah.
But but I do think that, like, when we think about
the backhand, it was a backhand compliment.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it was a compliment, but I think.
Yes, it is. Because if you could make do with less than you should be having, then it speaks to our resilience. I understand what you're saying.
I see what you're saying.
I understand what you're saying, right? Like, they don't believe you. You're telling you, I'm supposed to feel good because you call me an effective poorhouse.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that part. But there's, you know, there's two sides every coin.
Sure. Yeah. I guess through the interpretation of effective as you're doing well with what you have,
mm-hmm.
/ effective as you are essentially a poorhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on how you interpret
that, you're right.
You know, the mm-hmm. meaning could lend itself to something. But
he did something
different
about it, though, in fairness to him.
Sure.
Right? He labeled us how he labeled us, which was, you're forward or out of place,
mm-hmm.
right? Even if you're accurate, you were still forward or out of place, right?
Yes.
But they did something about it. That's the most important thing.
Yes.
Right?
And I do think that type of mentality, or rather that comment, didn't come out of thin air.
Mm-hmm.
So though it may have come a decade later, I think it still falls under the same context within which we were acquired, right?
Mm-hmm.
We were still we were transitioning out of naval administration
mm-hmm.
rule. And I do believe that how we situated ourselves, or rather how we were situated in that moment, was not just a reflection of our economic position and status, but also where we were socially and even mentally. And I believe that.
And geographically, you know.
And geographically.
That was a key part.
Absolutely.
As well. You're aware of the fact that this purchase
was a geopolitical strategic move.
And it was actually considered 50 years before, you know.
Absolutely.
It was like Abraham Lincoln, 1867, and William Seward,
yes.
Right? The state secretary. And we got to give the Senate credit, you know,
mm-hmm.
because I was reading this to Malik, right? The U.S. Senate, right, actually turned it down. Right, because he said, no, I ain't really look at the kind of value that going on down there. Mm-hmm. You check what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, you know, of course, they were looking at, you know, building power. Everything for them
was, you know, an imperialist.
Yeah, this obsession with imperialism, mm-hmm. and power. You know what I'm saying? And in doing that, they're sacrificing the sensitivity dynamic that's needed. Like, what about the people then, man? Look out for the people then.
Right,
you know what I'm saying? So some of them, they're not cut that way, and it's prevalent today. People do anything for power.
Oh, certainly, and we see the ramifications of that.
Yeah, man.
Corruption breeds out of that kind of mentality.
Yes, sir.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think what's important to note is that when we were transferred, one of the things that I believe we consistently struggled with since then is really understanding ourselves in distinction from our new American identity at mm-hmm. that time, and understanding that we are people with immense value outside of our attachment to the continental United States and to the moniker of America and Americanness. A part of our work in really setting ourselves free to be able to value ourselves more is actually, I believe, in disentangling our identity mm-mm. from Americanness.
Mm-mm. Disentangling.
Yeah.
From what?
Americanness.
mm-hmm. By definition, Americanness.
Yeah, Americanness. Mm-hmm. I believe that we are really attached to our American identity, and it provides some measure of security, right? Because we have access to federal resources and aid in times of crisis and all of these other things. And when we become a bit too over-reliant on the federal government, which has proven itself to be still inadequate to our needs, right? We cannot vote for president. We do not have a congresswoman who can actually vote when it matters most. And we have all of these restrictions on how we're even conceived as a space as it relates to the United States. And yet, and still, I think in many ways, we valorize the U.S. and our relationship to it. And I'm not saying that there aren't real benefits to some sort of connection or affiliation, but I do think that we have to really consider our identity from a more global African diasporic and even Caribbean perspective.
Malik Sekou gonna be joining us again next week, Tuesday, and we're gonna talk about the self-governance window that began in 1970, right? And that's something, but he mentioned a word, negritude, right? He mentioned that word. I learned that word, I guess I was in my early 30s.
Hmm.
So when I heard it, I was thinking Negro attitude and didn't realize it was more than that. You know, it was a literary thing. It was about education, right? Mm-hmm. It was about feeling good about your contribution. You know what I'm saying?
Black consciousness.
You know what I'm saying? And the Harlem Renaissance, you know, a part of that and all that stuff. The James Baldwins of the world.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So, but it all comes from what? Education and knowledge and confidence. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people don't understand that variable, right? It's I know a lot of people who are brilliant, but afraid to talk.
Yeah.
Intimidated by, you know, the notion that they could speak in a public forum.
Right.
You know, and that's something that we need to work on as a people. We got our Dr. Jessica Samuel joining us here this morning, second go around, as promised. And when we come back, I'm going to talk to her. I'm going to mention a couple of names to her. I give her like a little quiz to see, you know, if she's reading a lot. Courtesy of a conversation I had with Dr. Clement White. Back in 2011. We'll be back right after this.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we are not afraid to stand up to the high and mighty like Jeff Bezos.
He had that big cowboy hat on. He looked like a shrink ray had hit Garth Brooks.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join me as we speak truth to power, at least until power agrees to buy us out, on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
He said that black smoke was constantly coming out of the burn pits 24/7. And my reaction to it was like, wow, that doesn't sound very safe. Wonder what that's about. And in my mind, I couldn't imagine at the time that type of system operating could potentially harm our service members.
Journalism that seeks and reveals. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
I'm Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday. In these divided times, what could be more important than a conversation? Conversation with someone we don't know, someone we think we know, someone with whom we disagree or think we do. Join us as we ask questions of politicians, ranchers, parents, athletes, activists, gardeners, writers, and lots more. Then listen along with you.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
There are many complex issues that arise in our territory.
Comes with the Territory with Leslie Comision.
Join me, Leslie Comision, for a breakdown of political issues facing our territory, one conversation at a time. I'm here to be the voice you can rely on for information that is straightforward and comprehensive. Tune in to be a part of the discussion. It all comes with the Territory.
Comes with the Territory airs Sundays at 1 p.m. and re-airs at 7 p.m. on WTJX-TV, Channel 12.
And we're back here and analyze this and VI History Month, and I enjoy talking about our history. And you know, I got Dr. Jessica Samuel joining us here this morning. Good morning again, Doc. Glad to have you on.
Good morning.
Your fan club is growing. One of my people, them, don't send me a text message to let me know the song ain't good, and they like the information sharing.
Thank you.
So, I had gotten elected for the fourth time in 2010. So we got the swearing in day, January 2011. Senator Celestino White. I'm sure you've heard that name before.
Of course.
You know, he likes to. He enjoyed projecting himself as a street man, and you know, he ain't got too much of that intellectual thing, which was a sham, right? right, in a good way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was a sham, right? Because, and I gonna prove it now, right? so we're at the swearing in, and he recognizes his brother, and he brags about his brother being a lecturer at Brown University, Clement White, right?
Mm.
So you know, and so I'm a history major, so I'm looking forward to talking with him. But so let's first expose the sham,
mm-hmm.
right? That is, right? Celestino White bragging about, you know, he's a street man and all them thing, and he ain't too bright, right? That's it, you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is no way biologically that your brother could be a professor at Brown,
right?
Right, and you be a dummy.
Mm-hmm. And also elected senator.
11 yeah. times over, though,
right?
Right. So genes, genetics don't work like that. You know what I'm saying? So if your brother lecturing at Brown, that means you got something in your noggin of value, right? So that's just a street thing. So I finally get to meet with him. We had our reception outside in the courtyard. Normally we used to go to Frenchman Tree for whatever, but in that case, you know, they wanted to make a statement. Let's do it in the yard and all this stuff. So I'm sitting there with him, and he mentions two names. I don't think he realized, right, because his niece, Celestino White, niece Colette Amaro, had introduced me. I don't think he realized, you know, you weren't just talking to a senator, you're talking to a history major. So when I hear names, dates, and all that stuff, when I done that, I gotta go do my homework.
Mm.
So he mentioned these two names, Jose Marti and Domingo Sarmiento, two Latin American leaders.
Mm.
And both of them are writers. One of them actually ended up being a president. Right? So you can write that down. Jose Marti, Cuba. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Marti, Cuba. And Domingo Sarmiento, Argentina. Right? And what he was telling me, right? He was telling me ain't just about what they were saying. is that they were living what they were saying. A lot of people are real good at talking about things, but there's another level to it if you actually have to experience it. You check what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And these were scholars, and so as a historian, because that's what you are, you're no doubt about that, and a culturalist, right? What impact do you want to have, you know, when we get to 2035 and 2040 and you're looking back at the Jessica Samuel, what the term did I use, the roads traveled, where would you, what would you want over that 10 years, 10, 15, 20 years to say my contribution was?
Yeah. Not a whole biographical reflection. Yeah, that's a really powerful question. Honestly, I think it's really simple for me. I want my mark to be that of someone who transformed their communities by truly elevating consciousness among the people belonging to them. And I say communities in plural because there's so many spaces that I actually call home. The Virgin Islands is primary and number one, but I spent some time in St. Vincent, which is where my mother's from. You know that.
That's a regional thing. Caribbean.
Totally. Caribbean. Yeah. Like this entire place outside of this space, the whole region. But also even time in St. Louis, right? Mm-hmm. And in Boston. And these are communities. Like when I go into a place, my hope and prayer is always that I don't just leave a mark, but also the threads, they are stretched and they help to really connect each place together to help have a sort of transnational experience and dialogue. Like what I do here in the Virgin Islands, I hope has and bears some sort of relevance to the work that I did and hopefully will continue to do with the people that I met and the organizations I worked with and alongside in St. Louis as well as Boston. So for me, the real impact is in education and consciousness awareness and raising. I want people to feel empowered. I want them to be equipped with knowledge and information to be able to make informed decisions about every aspect of their lives and livelihood.
Not half the aspect, all.
All. Yeah. We should be thinking about how we develop ourselves individually, socially, culturally, economically, and otherwise, but we should be doing so well equipped. A lot of people have a lot of ideas, but sometimes they're not really grounded in history. Mm-hmm. They're not grounded in fact. They're not grounded in the reality of who we are and can be. Mm-hmm. And so my hope is that through education, just very broadly, as a doctor, as an educator, as a community organizer and activist, that I equip people with information that they may not have known otherwise, but not just equip them, but empower them to do something with it.
Well, let me go through it now. Since your view is about a progressive, knowledgeable Virgin Islands, mm-hmm. right? Let me hit the three of them. What St. John need now? When you look at St. John, what's St. John need now?
Yo, St. John is in such...
That word there, when you do that, you don't know how it'll move me. When you say, yo, as a hip-hop junkie, that's the way we don't start the conversation.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I don't think you know what you just did. You
it's coming from the soul.
When you say, yo.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, you know what I mean? But St. John.
Yes.
Given its history, what we need for St. John. I mean, we done 65% lockout.
Yeah.
So we got to max out the next 35%. Limited.
We do. I think St. John needs preservation. All of us need that, right? But St. John, I think, is in high stakes situation where the island is increasingly becoming unaffordable, right? It's already unaffordable, mm-hmm. but it's only becoming progressively worse. People who are from there, who are ancestral natives to the land, they are struggling to retain ownership of what is ancestral land. And there's a serious issue of land injustice on the island that has to be tended to. There's so many people who have a heart for the island and want to see it really thrive and the people within it thrive, but they're competing interests on St. John. You know, the average home when I was doing my research back in 2020, cost over $1 million.
Craziness.
Average price.
Craziness, man.
Who affording that?
Really? Craziness at that.
Especially on our salary. Yeah, the majority of Virgin Islanders actually work for the government and make whatever we make, right? You know that's not paying for that. Mm-hmm. So who else then has access is a question. And then what happens then results in a whole bunch of displacement and gentrification. And so I think we have to be keeping our eyes on St. John because they need us. We have to continually think about how space is constructed on that island and remade, not just through the national park, but also through various private interests and investments, and how that is effectively locking out Virgin Islands people from their own homeland. So that's St. John.
We might need to take back some of that, or no?
Take back some of the national park land?
Yeah, man.
I mean, if we can, I'm all for...
You know, I know Rockefeller meant well and all that good stuff, but that was a 50s and 60s vision. This is 2025.
So we're suffering.
In another 9 months.
Yeah.
I'm just being real. Yes. You know what I'm saying? So that's the other. Yes. What's St. Thomas need?
I think St. Thomas needs a reckoning with their identity as well. And I think they need love and TLC. And that might seem counterintuitive, right? Because they're the capital, and many times they brag about that being sort of the center of everything. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's a way in which being the center of commerce and of all these tourist-based economies and industries can sometimes dilute our identity, right? And get us a little bit confused about what our real purpose is and how we should be thinking about the long-term investments of the Virgin Islands collectively. So I think Tomians need TLC so that they can consistently interrogate their relationship even to this notion of being center stage, this notion of being the capital, right? And the place where all the cruise ships go to. I think that there's work there to be done. On St. Croix,
I will just let you go. Me go.
I think what we need here is more opportunities to actually channel what is such a dynamic and forceful energy of resistance and rebellion. I think St. Croix, we know, it's very similar to St. John in its sort of historical ethos, right? It is a place where people do whatever they have to do by any means necessary in order to sustain themselves and to protect their interests. And I like that. And I rock with that. And I am very proud to be a Cruisian because of that. And I believe that that fervor and energy needs to be channeled and directed in a way that actually has us thinking strategically about the things that we're trying to develop for ourselves in order to propel ourselves forward. So, you know, Lime Tree, Hess is such the term that we are so comfortable with referring.
Hess, they used to give you a truck before you were born. We used to get a Christmas truck every year. They used to send
the little toy. We have that too in our house. Yeah. That's so funny. But yeah, you know, it's always going to be Hess in my head. Yeah, but yes, Lime Tree Bay.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that is such a conundrum. And but I also think it's such a teachable symbol, right? We can look at that as instruction about how we should be thinking more carefully about how we develop industries here in ways that aren't forcing us within a box and really limiting what's possible. We have to start thinking about the emerging economies and how can we set up ourselves to be self-sustaining in a way that's not going to deteriorate our land or even cause public health issues to occur.
Yeah, man. That's a good point. Now, St. Thomas, right? In a weird way, right? St. Thomas is the least conscious of the three islands. Neville James says so. Yet, yet some of the most conscious Virgin Islanders come from St. John.
Right.
You know, it's an ironic thing, you know what I mean? Edward Wilmot Blyden, right? Rachel Francis, right? The name's coming to me. Lesmore Emmanuel, Jean Emmanuel, who from St. Croix, live in St. Thomas, Malik Siku, right? You could sit down, Kwabena, Glenn Davis, you sit down with them and they'll talk your head off. Right,
the secret shelter, some women in there.
Exactly, the woman. Jenny Twitt, the list goes on, the Gladys Abrahams, all the great names, right? Edith Bach, right, for the library, right? But you know why, right? You know what happened? The port was so valuable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That deep, that port, that harbor there. Mm-hmm. Right? You can't put a dollar figure in the harbor. No? That dollar figure is so rich. Mm-hmm. And mercantilism, right? Right. The trade, selling, and it dominate. You check what I'm saying?
Center,
but you're right, you know, and I'm not taking a shot at Zintermarket. Over there it's about business. Mm-hmm. Right? Over here, you know, we laid back. You know what I'm saying? But we ready to rebel in an instant. It gonna happen. It gonna happen quick.
Yeah.
Right? And in St. John, let's face it, that's oppression going on over there.
Absolutely.
You check what I'm saying? Look, early 2000s. You said $1 million is the average home. The average price for a new home, $3-5 million mm-hmm. over there, right? And this is 40, 60 miles apart and universes apart in the reality of how we live in on the ground. Yeah. You check what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
But maybe that's the beauty of it. You check what I'm saying? You got to... When the glass half empty, that means the glass half full. You check what I'm saying? Mm. And it impacts how we speak. You know, same budget, you know, but we pronounce words differently. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
But I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. It's a lovely...
I agree.
You know, there's a loveliness about us. And then just, you got water island sprinkling there. You know what I mean? Just to let you know that, you know what I mean? Just got a little someplace you can run away and hide if you want to hide. Mm. And all that. But our history, you know, when you're looking back at, you know, from the Hamiltons to the lighter stores, Sustent Benz in communication, Terrence Tadman, great diplomat, you know. Our history, you know, we just got to promote it more. I think that's what we got obligation to do that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, it require a significant financial investment.
Yes.
Right? We could talk till the cow then come home, or like you just said, in the Caribbean, till kingdom come.
Yeah.
right?
But we have to put our money where our mouth
is. Yeah, man. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, but that St. John thing is something that we definitely got to fix, you know, and if it requires asking the federal government, you know, we need back a good 10% of that, you know.
Anything is possible, I believe.
Me too. And let's face it, what was seen in 1955 or 60, whenever Lawrence Rockefeller came here and he wanted to protect us, we love that, right? But the people them need some freedom. They need to be able to stretch their arms.
Mm-hmm.
And St. John is limited.
But even that is worthy of pushback, right? Because did he really come to protect us, or did he come to protect his interests? Mm-hmm. You know, he so happened to be an environmental conservationist who cared about the preservation of scenic beauty, and St. John was one of the crystals in his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But truthfully, Rockefeller received a great deal from that transaction,
of course.
You know? Canelbe came out of it, Rock Resorts,
that's
own thing right now.
But it was always valuable, though. And they knew that.
That's the point.
You check what I'm saying? And when Raul Carrillo had me to know, they keep saying that no president wasn't here since Truman or whatever, but Richard Nixon came here on a vacation in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they know. They want to get away. And English speaking.
St. John is where we went.
English speaking. Mm-hmm. Right? And they didn't worry about the color of the people neither. Just wanted to get away.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Doc, thanks for having me. Thanks for coming out. Looking forward to talking with you again. Okay, that's Dr. Jessica Samuel. A return engagement here on Analysis. Be good and be safe. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Music can be an incredibly personal experience. A song can inspire you, it can comfort you, it can make you feel understood, it can even take you back to a specific moment in your life. And it all begins with the artist. Join me, Raina Duras, as I get personal through in-depth interviews with your favorite musicians and find out where those songs come from on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
I'm Aisha Roscoe, host of Weekend Edition Sunday, where we're not just interested in what's going on in the world, but why it's happening and how. Details are important. So are different points of view. We're dedicated to bringing you the stories behind the big events and the small ones, too. Join us every Sunday morning for Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition, Sundays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.